There have been great advances in green energy technology, allowing us to harness the power of the sun, wind, and earth. But it's been difficult to bring these technologies home. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In the next hour, we'll explore green energy technology for home use. Is it practical to build a wind turbine out back? What about solar panels? Can they really save you money? And geothermal sounds great. Is it worth the cost? Carol Yates will be here. She is with the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at the University of Northern Iowa. She and her husband, Jack, have a number of these technologies working in their home. He'll also be on the program. And Keith Coots of the Iowa Energy Center will be here as well. And we'd like to hear from you with your questions and let us know if you have any of these technologies working in your home. 866-780-9100. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. In the last decade, wind turbines have become a common sight across the state of Iowa. Green energy production is a reality, but a lot of Iowans want more. And today, we're going to talk about green energy technologies for your home. If you have solar panels or a private wind turbine or a geothermal heating or cooling, call us and tell us how it's working for you and how you decided what to install at your home. You can also call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guests today are Carol Yates of the Energy Center, or the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at the University of Northern Iowa. Her husband, Jack Yates, is also here. He's a professor of psychology at UNI, but he's here today to talk about the technologies they're using in their home. Thank you both for being here today.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Thanks a lot for coming. And Keith Coots is also here with us. He is the research administrator for the Iowa Energy Center at Iowa State University. Hello, Keith.
Hi.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you all so much for being here today. And I want to start with talking about energy efficiency. It's certainly not as exciting as some of the technologies we'll be talking about as the hour goes on, but it seems to be a very practical starting point for people who want to depend less on the energy grid. Carol, how do you start? How do you assess the energy needs of your home?
One of the first things that people can do is to check with their utility company and ask to have an energy audit done at their home. And they'll send out someone to come talk with you and look at your space and then come back and make some suggestions of energy efficiency changes that you could make, whether it would be caulking the windows or tightening up the outside of the home, adding more insulation. There are another number of things that can be done, so people should start with their local utility company, whoever that is.
Is there a cost associated with getting an energy audit?
Not usually for the homeowner. I mean, if you were on a farm, then there probably would be a cost, but not usually for the homeowner.
And how much of a difference can things like that make, caulking the windows?
I think that the figure I've heard is you can reduce your energy use by about one-third through energy efficiency, about 30%. So it's definitely a good first step.
And it's probably pretty important to know how much energy you're using before you would even look into any of these alternative energy sources.
Right. That would be a good place to start. And homeowners can do that by checking out their utility bills and looking at them and finding out exactly how many kilowatt hours they're using or their gas usage.
For a lot of people, the idea of alternative energy is exciting because of the environmental impact of using less electricity that comes from fossil fuels. And it seems to me that if you can cut down your energy use by a third through some of these fairly mundane procedures that you would do on your home, that it seems like that would just be a tremendous first step for everyone.
It is, and it really is the place to start. Alliant Energy has a new program that they're pilot testing called Efficiency First Renewable Energy Cashback Rewards. They will help people financially with renewable energy, but they want people to look at energy efficiency first.
All right. Well, Keith, let's move on to some of the more exciting technologies that we might be talking about today. And I want to start with solar. What kind of options do people have for solar energy in their home?
Well, there are really two types of solar that we would be working with in Iowa. Photovoltaics, which is producing electricity from solar, and solar thermal, which is producing heat from the sun. Solar thermal can be as simple as passive solar energy, greenhouses, or just allowing the light to go through windows. Solar thermal can also be active, where you're actually pumping water or allowing water to circulate through your house or in an area that you're trying to heat. And you can also use that solar thermal for domestic hot water, to heat hot water for showers, washing dishes, things like that.
Let's talk a little bit more in depth about each of these two different kinds of solar systems. How does a photovoltaic system work?
Well, in general, it takes the photons from the sun. The radiation hits a solar panel. It's typically constructed out of silicon, and it causes electrons within the silicon to flow. And that's that flow of electricity through the solar panel and into the wires that allows a circuit to be created, which generates the electricity. Now, people need to realize that solar panels produce DC current, so it's just like a battery. So they need a device called an inverter to convert that DC current into household current or alternating current.
All right. And how does that compare with solar thermal? How does that work?
Solar thermal is much more simple. It's simply a matter of taking the heat from the sun, collecting it, usually using a flat plate collector. It's a box that contains tubes. They're usually painted, the box is painted black to absorb more of the energy from the sun. The tubes are usually a conductive material. They can be copper, they can be glass. And that sunlight, the energy from the sun, the heat is transferred into the fluid and it's circulated through the system, either through natural convection or use of a small pump.
And how does that get converted into electricity?
You would typically not use that to produce electricity. That would be used for producing heat, for space heat, or for heating water. In the Southwest, they do have concentrating solar collectors that will produce enough heat to generate steam. And then that steam can be used to produce electricity, but we typically don't have that in Iowa.
All right. And Jack and Carol, I know that you have both of these kinds of systems installed in your home. So let's start with the photovoltaic system, which you had installed in 2007. Just give me a rundown. What does it look like?
Well, from the street, it doesn't look like anything because we designed the house to hide it from the street. So our neighbors are perfectly happy with it, but from the back of the house, it looks like these flat plates that have kind of a cobalt blue sheen to them. I think they're quite pretty, and they're just there are 30 panels arranged in a neat array on the roof, and they sit there in the sun doing their job.
30 panels? That sounds like a very big installation to me.
Well, it takes up about half our roof. We have a roof that's pitched north and south, so that. So as to make room for the solar heating that we have there and also the PV, the solar electricity that we have.
Did you build your house specifically to accommodate this kind of thing?
Yes. In fact, we built it and we moved in 1991. And when we designed it, we kept in mind that we wanted to make it as energy efficient as possible. So we have, you know, extra insulation in the walls and in the ceiling beyond what was specified in code at the time. And we also have, we maximized south windows and minimized north windows. So as to let sunlight in during the winter. And we also have thermal mass in the house that collects the heat, prevents the house from overheating during the day on a winter day, and then keeps the heat, you know, releases it at night to keep the house warmer. The thing about building a house in Iowa is that you really need to consider all the seasons. You can't just consider, we think about, you know, winter and saving energy in the winter, but you need to save energy in the summer too because it also gets very hot here. So we built the house to have overhangs on the south to keep the sun out in the summer. And we also put in clerestory windows very high up in the house so that we can open those at night in the summer. And we get a great chimney effect on a cool evening in the summer to cool off the house at night, and then we're able to shut it up during the day and prevent a lot of air conditioning use.
Well, I suppose if you are going to be using passive solar in your house, you really do need to think about winter and summer, because you could put yourself in a situation where you're cutting way down on heating costs, but you're going to be really hot.
Exactly. You don't want that sunlight coming in July.
So, well, I want to talk more about your photovoltaic installation. Again, this sounds like a very large installation to me. How much did it cost you?
Well, it did cost a lot. It cost us $40,000, and we're paying monthly on that. That's how we afforded it. The Carol and Keith can talk about the loan that we got from the Iowa Energy Center to be able to finance this.
Well, I want to talk more about the loans in a little while,
okay.
But how is that worth it to you?
If you want to save money right now, what you should do is nothing. Just stay on the grid and buy power from a utility company. But that wasn't our goal. We started out with a real concern back in the 70s and 80s with air pollution being produced by coal-fired power plants. You know, my office here on the campus of the University of Northern Iowa is just a few hundred yards away from a large power plant that emits particulates that cause respiratory problems, and it also emits mercury that's very harmful to fetuses and young children. So we started out with a concern about cutting back on fossil fuel use in power plants. But my big concern now, because all of the evidence is that the climate change. So at this point, we decided to add the active systems to our house because we're very concerned about what the future may bring in terms of climate change if we don't cut our carbon footprint.
How much electricity can you produce with this photovoltaic installation?
Well, we produce 85 to 90% of our electric needs, and that's a very good figure for Iowa. I like to point out to people that we have the stereotype that Iowa's too cloudy and not doesn't receive enough sunlight for PV and solar thermal to be reasonably, you know, operable. But that's not true. We get in Iowa almost the same amount of electricity. Almost the same amount of solar energy as the Sunshine State, Florida. There's a map on the Department of Energy website that shows how much solar energy each state gets, and we're very comparable to Florida. So there's really no reason. Florida has a lot of rooftop solar collectors, and there's no reason that we couldn't do the same in Iowa.
Well, we'll talk more about solar energy in a moment. We're talking about all kinds of green energy technologies for your home today. My guests are Carol and Jack Yates from the University of Northern Iowa and Keith Kutz from the Iowa Energy Center at Iowa State University. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about green energy technologies for your home. Today, or right now, we're talking about solar energy, and my guests today are Carol Yates of the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at the University of Northern Iowa. Her husband, Jack Yates, is also here. He's a professor of psychology at UNI, but today he's talking about the installations they have at their home in Cedar Falls. And Keith Kutz is also here. He's the research administrator for the Iowa Energy Center at Iowa State University. And before the break, we were talking about the potential for solar energy production in the state of Iowa. And I just moved back from Michigan, so I don't think Iowa is cloudy at all. not a bit. But Keith, let's talk about the potential for solar energy production in Iowa. What makes this a good place or a bad place for solar panels?
Well, the state of Iowa, as Jack said, is well situated. We wouldn't have the agricultural economy that we have in this state if we didn't have adequate sunlight. And the difference between Florida and Iowa, of course, is that we have snow. So the biggest problem that we have in Iowa relative to some of the Sunbelt states is that we're at a higher latitude The intensity of the sunlight changes throughout the year, and so the potential for generating electricity changes. It's highest in the summer and lowest in the winter. And there are a number of factors that can also impact the ability to generate electricity or heat from solar. Clouds, of course, make a big difference, and that's why we are similar to Florida, is we have a similar amount of precipitation, cloud cover throughout the year. But the key to taking advantage of solar is proper orientation of your solar panels. You can do some things such as putting tracking systems that will adjust the angle of the solar panels as the seasons change and as the time of day changes to try to maximize the amount of energy that are directly striking those panels. So there's things that you can do to improve the output from photovoltaic cells. They do come with a cost. Of course, every bell and whistle that you add increases the cost of a system. But if you're serious about doing it, then proper orientation, proper sizing, and so forth is critical.
Now, of course, we do have more cloud cover usually during the winter months, but it's also intensely cold here in Iowa during the winter months. Does the cold affect the amount of energy you can produce through solar panels?
In theory, yes. The colder the system, the more freely the electrons will flow, so you have less impediment to transfer. That's not typically going to be that measurable. If you are really trying to get it down to the kilowatt hour level, you're really not going to see that much of a change due to temperature. The bigger factors are going to be things that cover the solar panels, frost in the morning or dust during harvest season or snow.
10 inches of snow.
10 inches of snow, yeah. The system that we have on our building here in Ames was covered with snow for a fair amount of the winter last year, and so we had very low production on our system until it melted off. But it just seemed like every time that it would melt, we'd get another snowstorm and it would cover it again. And it's not in an area where we have the ability to go out and sweep the snow off. And that can be a problem. If you can't access your panels, then you can't keep them clear.
Carol, how do you deal with snow cover at your house?
We have a similar problem.
She sends me out to deal with it.
We have a similar problem. We don't have access to the steeply pitched roof to get the snow off. And on the PV, on the photovoltaic system, it doesn't melt off very rapidly. Jack had an idea that works pretty well if it's about 25 degrees out.
Or above. We actually put a garden sprinkler on the roof that we can turn on and just sprinkle, you know, ordinary water onto the panels if it's 25 to 30 degrees, which, you know, you do get those days in the wintertime from time to time. And then the snow slides off in about half an hour.
How do you keep your hose from freezing?
Well, you have to drain the hose or keep it drained in between uses. But, you know, the fact that the hose is going from a faucet on the ground to the roof means that it's easy to drain.
You can use gravity. It's on your side.
Gravity drains it, yes.
Carol, how do you, if you're interested in installing solar panels, whether they're photovoltaic or thermal, how do you assess your home to see if it would be a good site for solar?
What you need to do is make an appointment with a certified site assessor, and there are several of those people in Iowa. Probably the easiest way to find them is through the Iowa Renewable Energy Association's source book, which is online at their website that I think is irenew.org. And they have a list of people who would be willing to come out for a fee, not a very hefty one, but tell you if your site would be appropriate for solar PV or solar thermal, what kinds of problems might arise. That would be step number one.
Okay. Yeah.
You can also, without calling out a solar installer or consultant, you can do a self-assessment as well. You need to have a well-exposed location. No trees that are going to be shading the panels especially in the afternoon or at the noontime hours. And if you're going to be roof mounting them, you really need to have a roof that can support the weight of the panels, but also should be south facing. If you have those things, then it's worth then going the next step. If you don't have that situation in your home, it's probably not going to be worth even exploring solar.
Brian is on the line from Des Moines. Hello, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a geothermal system in my house. I have a pond loop system, a 3-ton. So my house is powered just by electricity. And I've looked into the solar and into the wind. And some of the problems I ran into was more on the banking end, especially with the solar in Iowa. Through some of the local Iowa banks, they're very hesitant to get on board with any loan programs. And I ran into quite a bit of difficulty to the point where I actually gave up on the solar idea.
Well, I think maybe this is a good time to talk about financing then. Keith, why don't you respond to that? Because I know that that's one of the things that you deal with on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, one of the problems that a number of bankers have is understanding the technology. We ran into this back in the mid-90s when wind was starting to become popular. And the Iowa Energy Center was given a low-interest renewable energy loan program by the Iowa legislature. We found that, especially in rural areas, banks knew how to do lending for combines, for farm operations, and so forth, but they had no idea how to value wind or how to assess whether or not these systems were viable. And to a certain extent, that same thing exists with solar right now. Solar is not as common or as mature a technology in Iowa as wind is. You'll find more lenders who are willing to look at a wind project than you will at a solar project. But there are... It often just takes somebody who has a technical background to come in and speak with the lender to explain to them what the technology is about, how long it will last, what the maintenance costs are, what's the salvage value, and so forth. And often once the lender understands that, then they will get on board, provided there aren't other issues that are out there. Now, there are a number of financing opportunities. Like I said, the Iowa Energy Center has its Alternate Energy Revolving Loan Program, which can provide up to 50% of the financed cost at 0% interest, with the other 50% coming from a lender. And that program is nice because we're essentially providing a loan guarantee on our portion of it. That reduces the risk substantially for the lender. Often, once we have talked with that lender about the project, we can get them on board. Not always, but most of the time we can do that. There are also incentives out there, tax incentives. There are at the federal level for installing wind and solar systems. If you're in a rural area, there are also the potential, if you're a rural business, to take advantage of USDA loan guarantees and grants. So there are a number of things, and Carol had also indicated Alliant Energy, and there are a couple of other utilities in Iowa who have their own incentive programs, either financing or rebates or a combination that can help reduce the cost. And all of those things together, when they're presented as a package to a lender, can typically make the project go. Now, in your guest's situation, I don't know what the situation was, so I can't really comment on it. But if you can't get financing through one lender, I suggest finding another one.
Brian, does that give you a next step to follow up on?
Well, it did. I ended up going through four or five different lenders, and I did have a few of them that spoke with through their department and got the correct information. And there was a few of them that, you know, were willing to kind of work with me. But it was one of the biggest stumbling blocks with the solar that I would say I ran into. It really was quite a wall.
And have you actually done a solar installation?
No. I started pricing it out, and by the time I got done with it, I was looking at a 10-kilowatt system. You're probably looking at maybe 36, 38 panels using a microinverter technology where you have small inverters with each solar panel instead of one large inverter that controls the system. And, you know, after pricing it out, you're probably looking at, you know, maybe 25 or 30 years before you really see a payback that I could see through the calculations. And to me, you know, if you're going to be in a home for 30 years, you get a complete payback. But it really is a question of, you know, what do I want to do for the environment, and, you know, how much do I want to make this pay off for me? Right. It's really where you're kind of sitting, I think.
Brian, thank you so much for your call today. And I want to ask you, Keith, is there an outlook for solar panels and this kind of technology becoming more affordable?
Well, over the last couple of years, solar panel prices have come way down. If you went back 3-4 years ago, you were looking at an installed cost of roughly $8, maybe $9 a watt, depending on the installer, how complicated the system was, and so forth. The panels themselves were running in the range of $5 to $6 a watt. Those have come down considerably, and they continue to drop in price, although that's starting to bottom out now. But the biggest problem with the systems are that they aren't efficient in the way that they convert electricity. Your caller indicated that he had a calculated payback of 25 to 30 years, and that's pretty common. The panels themselves are typically guaranteed for about 25 years, but as he said, if you're not planning on living in that location for that long, it's a little bit difficult to justify from an economic standpoint making that kind of an investment. But this is probably historically one of the lowest cost times for installing photovoltaic systems. And the nice thing is, from a technological standpoint, they are starting to become more and more efficient in the way that they convert the electricity. So I would argue that solar thermal systems right now are the most cost-effective way of taking advantage of solar. They are much less expensive to install and to maintain than photovoltaics, and can still produce significant benefits in terms of reducing your home heating costs.
Well, and Carol, maybe you can talk about that a little bit. I think one of the systems that is most within people's reach right now is a solar hot water heater. How does that work?
That's true. That is one of the systems that is most cost effective. And if you're only looking at how much it costs, the payback is a lot quicker than a solar photovoltaic system. We have a system in our home that is not flat panels. It's what are called evacuated tubes. And I'm going to have Jack explain the technical parts of that. But we chose those because after doing some research, they seem to operate better in Iowa during the winter time rather than the flat panels. But there are definite reasons why solar thermal is a lot better way to go at this point than PV. And Jack, would you talk about the technical aspects, please?
Well, I don't know if I can say much about the technical aspects, but we chose the tubes because snow does fall off of them readily. They're just, we have 60 tubes. Each of them is about 2 inches and 3 inches in diameter. They're made of glass, and they have been evacuated, so there's a vacuum. But there's a liquid inside against a black painted panel that collects the solar energy and then transfers it to circulating fluid down to our water tank in the basement, and that heats up the water in the water tank, and then that's what we use for showering or washing dishes.
And how much would it cost to install a system like that?
Well, we complicated things by putting in a floor heating system at the same time. So our cost was a lot more than it would have been if we hadn't done that. But I think if you just look at the tubes that we put on the roof and the tank that sits in the basement, I think the cost was about $10,000.
Okay, and that would be for just a hot water.
Just for your domestic hot water, okay. Which would be, you know, what comes out of the tap when you turn on the hot water.
All right. And Mary from Altoona has a question. We have just a moment left. Mary, what's your question?
I've got a lovely facing steep-sided barn and corn crib that would lend themselves perfectly to solar panels. My husband and I have talked about it, but I've been concerned about fire. It's a traditional barn covered in steel, but we store our hay, you know, in the loft, you know, up on top of the barn. And I'm wondering about fire with the panels.
Keith, can you respond to that?
If the system is properly wired, there should be relatively minimal risk for fire as a result of the panels themselves. Now, if there's a fault in the wiring that causes a spark, it's going to be no different than if that were in your attached to your roof on your house. So that's why it's important to have a qualified installer put the systems in place and to have them inspected. It's one thing that a lot of people don't want to do is to have their systems inspected, but that's critical to ensuring that they've been installed safely and that they're properly wired.
All right, Mary, thank you so much for your question. Keith Kootz is the research administrator for the Iowa Energy Center at Iowa State University. Also with me today are Carol and Jack Yates of the University of Northern Iowa. We're talking about green energy technologies for your home, and you're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about green energy technology for your home. My guests are Carol Yates of the Center for Energy and Environmental Education at UNI. Her husband, Jack Yates, is here. He's a professor of psychology at UNI, but he's also the guy who cleans off the solar panels on the Yates' house. So we're talking about all the different systems they have at their house. And also with us is Keith Kootz. He is the research administrator for the Iowa Energy Center at Iowa State University. And I want to move on to geothermal systems next. And Jack and Carol, I know you have one of these systems installed at your home. So tell us how geothermal works.
Well, geothermal uses the heat that's stored in the ground to heat and cool your house. So basically, we had people come and run tubes under the ground in our backyard. And those are connected to a compressor in the basement. And depending on how the compressor functions, it either extracts heat from the ground or it puts heat into the ground to cool our house in the summer. The ground all over the world, as I understand it, is around 50 degrees year-round. So that's a temperature that you could be using that to either heat. You can extract heat from it, or you can send heat to it. And so whether you can either heat your house or cool your house.
What is the impact of having this kind of system installed? Now, since you have so many different technologies in your home, and I know the geothermal was installed just last year, so maybe it wasn't easy to tell how much impact that would have on your energy use, but can you tell?
Well, we knew what it would do. We knew we had a gas furnace that was replaced by the geothermal, so we knew that we would be using less gas and more electricity because the geothermal, like I said, it works like an air conditioning unit, has a compressor, and so we knew we'd be using more electricity. We're not sure yet just exactly. I mean, it's only been a year, and we need to collect more data, but I believe I told you that we generate about 90%, 85 to 90% of our electricity. I think now we're going to be down to 70-75% because we do use more electricity. The thing is, burning gas releases gases into the atmosphere that warm the climate. And so we wanted to reduce our use of natural gas. And the thing about electricity is it can be generated using renewable resources. So, you know, that's why we wanted to increase our use of electricity and decrease our use of gas.
Well, it sounds like when you talk about that 50 degrees, that sounds like during the summer that would really sufficiently cool your home. Did you find that?
Oh, yeah. The air conditioning worked just fine.
Okay. And how does that integrate with the air conditioning unit?
Well, there is no air conditioning unit now.
Okay.
It's just all in the basement. There's a compressor in the basement. And a regular air conditioning unit sends your heat from the house. It extracts it from the house and sends it to the outside air. But this system extracts the heat from the house and sends it into the ground.
And how does that heat or cool air circulate through the home?
Well, there's a just like most people's central air conditioning system, there's a fan and duct work that circulates it through the house.
Okay, and how much did it cost you?
Well, we forgot to look that information
no.
up. By memory, I think it was like $17,000. But we were in a position where we felt like we couldn't not do it because at that time, our local utility, Cedar Falls Utilities, was offering interest-free $10,000 loan. So that took care of a big chunk of it. And so we just pay that on our utility bill. It's $85 a month. And we hardly noticed that. So, and then the rest of it, there was a federal rebate that took care of another big chunk of it on a rebate on our taxes. So we felt like we just had to do it.
And how long was your backyard dug up?
Well, it wasn't really dug up. They used a system where they drilled into the ground, and so there was only one place where they kind of made a mess. But they got that done in one day.
Is there any kind of upkeep necessary or a lifetime of this kind of system?
Well, the part underground should be there forever. I mean, it should not corrode or spring a leak or anything of that sort. The part in the basement where there's a compressor and a fan is like any furnace system. It will need maintenance, and it will wear out.
Keith, have you had a lot of people from the state of Iowa asking about geothermal systems? How common is this?
It's becoming much more common. We have the Energy Center offers certification courses for installers. There was a time a number of years ago where you couldn't find a qualified installer to put them in. And there were a lot of questions about, as Jack was stating, there questions about how efficient they are, how well they work, whether they'll leak, and things like that. It's difficult to not be able to find a qualified installer just about anywhere in the state now. The biggest concern with geothermal systems is, of course, as Jack said, the first cost, that upfront cost. It's considerably higher than a standard forced air furnace central air system. And it's important that people understand that geothermal systems are not for everybody. For example, in my own home here in Ames, it's an older house that has very little insulation in it. It was built back in 1922. And while I have the backyard space for putting in a geothermal loop, it wouldn't be cost effective for me to install a geothermal system because I don't have a well sealed house. I don't have adequate insulation. I don't have adequate high-efficiency windows to make my building envelope make it worthwhile. So in that particular situation, it may be just as cost-effective for me or others in a similar situation to put in a high-efficiency furnace and high-efficiency air conditioning standard system than to go the geothermal route.
Before we run out of time today, I want to move on to wind energy. But if you have a geothermal system installed in your house, let us know how it's been working for you. As we were talking about, Jack and Carol have had theirs for about a year, so they don't know fully how much the impact will be in their home. If you've had one for a while, let us know about it. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And if you have any other questions about any of the technologies we've been talking about today. Also, please feel free to join the conversation. 866-780-9100. Now, of course, wind energy is probably the most high-profile kind of green energy that we have in the state of Iowa right now. We do see these big wind turbines, wind farms all across the state. And I realize that people who live in town don't really have an option for erecting a wind turbine. But Keith, how practical would it be for someone who lived somewhere with plenty of land to erect a wind turbine to power their home?
Well, it depends, again, on what you're trying to do with it. If you're trying to just offset part of your own electricity or most of your electricity, systems in I won't say all places in Iowa are practical, but in many places in Iowa, you can make them pay off in a reasonable amount of time. And by reasonable, depending on your site, depending on how much you're paying for electricity from your utility, and the type of wind turbine and the size, you could be looking at anywhere from 15 years, maybe a little bit less in an ideal location, to a little bit more in other locations in terms of paybacks. So they aren't impractical, but they are like any other mechanical device. They are susceptible to maintenance, to the elements. High winds can take wind turbines down, lightning strikes, and things like that. So they that can be mitigated with insurance to cover those things. But what people need to realize with a wind turbine is that it is a substantial investment that will require them to keep it properly maintained over its lifetime. They also need to have a proper site assessment to determine where the proper location of that wind turbine should be. The closer you can have it to an existing utility line, to where you don't have to run a long run of wire to get the electricity to your home or to the utility, the better off you are. You need to keep it away from buildings and from trees. Those will reduce the amount of energy that you can extract from the wind. So having that proper site assessment is a critical aspect for any kind of a wind project.
And, of course, I understand that depending on your site, you would need to build a wind turbine of a different height and depending on how much electricity you wanted to produce. But can you give me a ballpark figure for what it would cost to build a wind turbine on your property?
Wind turbines, the small wind turbines of a residential size, are going to cost you in the range of $4,000 to $6,000 a kilowatt. So a 10-kilowatt system might cost you, depending on whether you were doing some of the work yourself or whether you were having it installed turnkey, could cost you in the range of $50,000 to $60,000. Now, that 10-kilowatt system will probably produce enough electricity, if it's in a good location in Iowa, properly located, probably would produce enough electricity to cover the average Iowa home. For some people, it might produce some excess. For some people, if they have a lot of electric use, it might not be quite large enough. But it should produce what the average Iowa home would need.
Bill is on the line from Sac City. Hello, Bill.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. An interesting program.
Well, thank you. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was just going to comment. We have two geothermal heat units in our home. And they drilled seven 200-foot vertical wells in the yard, which circulate ethylene glycol. And both they both heat and cool our home and provides most of the hot water also for the home as well. And the heat savings were about 50% for the gas savings, and the cooling costs were almost insignificant. In fact, we use the air conditioning a lot more because the costs are so insignificant to run the DC motors. And and the 30% federal tax credit really helped defray the cost, which made the initial decision a lot easier.
Why did you install two units?
Probably because we have too big of a home. It's about a 6,000 square foot home, so really we're kind of defying the ecological good person's thing in having too large a home. But that was another thing that kind of pushed the issue as well.
Okay, and how long have you had your systems?
About 2 years, and it's been really trouble-free. It's been an excellent system.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us, Bill.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Thanks a lot for your call. Rebecca's on the line from Grinnell. Hello, Rebecca.
Yes.
What's your question?
I have an existing home, and we had looked into putting geothermal in. We have a radiator boiler system rather than a forced air system. And I was wondering whether that's an efficient way to go, or you know, if it's even possible. So,
who wants to tackle that one?
Well, I can. This is Keith. I can speak to that. The boiler system probably means that you don't have any ductwork in your home.
That's right.
So running ductwork is going to add substantially to the cost of the system. But I would go back and look again and say, what is the efficiency of your existing boiler hot water system? Boiler hot water systems can be very, very cost effective, and they can produce very nice, gentle heat in the house. Now, of course, you don't get air conditioning with them.
Right.
which is a problem, but if you're looking seriously at doing some kind of a conversion over to an forced air type of system, get estimates from qualified installers. Look at what it would take to convert your system into a geothermal with the ductwork and everything else involved. Have them assess your building envelope in your house, and then make a decision whether a geothermal system is going to be worthwhile or just simply converting over to an air conditioning system. And if the cost of running ducts and so forth is going to be out of the your cost range, then they do have high efficiency window air conditioning units that can be strategically located in your house and meet those critical cooling needs that you may have at those worst times in Iowa summers.
But she would definitely need to have ductwork installed.
Yeah, you couldn't run a geothermal or a forced air heat or cooling system without ductwork.
All right. Rebecca, thank you so much for your call. And we have time for one more call. This is Jim in Denver. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Hi. You have both geothermal and a wind turbine at your home?
Yes, we do. And I just wanted to comment that you were talking about the geothermal, that it does work really well. We've been real happy with ours. We've had it for a couple of years now. And it allowed us to get rid of the LP tank. We live out in the country. And it's just worked out really well. The heat bills are, I can't quote you the numbers right now, but certainly down compared to filling up that LP tank all the time.
Well, yeah, and all those emergency calls in the middle of winter when you suddenly notice it's low or the thing of the past, too. That's
right.
Really nice. With your wind turbine, are you able to produce all of the electricity you need?
No, it's a small one. It's only a 2-kilowatt wind turbine. And, of course, with the geothermal, we use a lot more electricity now in the winter. It all around throughout the year, it probably produces about between a third and a half of what we use.
And
we're grid-tied, so it just... We have a net metering agreement.
Right.
And it also works out real well. I'm home today working outside, and the wind turbine's turning, and, you know, I like windy days like this. So,
if you don't mind me asking, how much did it cost you to install your wind turbine?
We installed ours fairly early, three years ago, and it cost us about $10,500.
Okay. Well, Jim, thank you so much for your call today.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. And we have just a moment before we go. I want to mention that coming up this weekend, Carol, there's a solar and energy efficiency tour in Cedar Falls, right?
That's right. We have several homes and a couple of businesses that will be on the tour. People can go to the website, and I'll give you that, and they can find the locations there. It's from 1 till 3, Sunday afternoon, October 3rd. And the website is www.ceee.uni.edu/solartour.aspx.
All right, and I will also post that on our Facebook page and on our Twitter page as well. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your own experiences.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And Keith, thank you for your time today as well.
Thank you very much.
My guests today were Carol and Jack Yates of the University of Northern Iowa, and also Keith Kutz. He is the research administrator for the Iowa Energy Center at Iowa State University. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance from Christina Sarnelli today, and technical support from Colin Araskovich and Phil Moss. This is Talk of Iowa.